Okay,
Okay,
we're
we're back.
back. That was about let's see, it's 6:42. I'm Greg. I'm gonna call the meeting back to order and retake the roll, and we're gonna hand it back to Ms. Krishna. So Greg's here. Davis, are you here?
I am here.
Jan, are you here?
Here.
Kara?
Here.
Sarah?
Here.
So we have our quorum reestablished, and we've got live simultaneous translation going on in Spanish. And so now I'm going to hand it back to Ms. Krishna, and sorry for interrupting you in the middle of your head of scores report, and take it away.
Sorry, Maru's here too. He didn't call my name.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I saw the flag. Hi, Maru. Maru is here. We have even more folks. Sorry about that.
All right. You seeing the right screen again? Okay. We were just checking in about upcoming events. Just a review, we're still COVID testing on Fridays. Definitely, you need to sign up by Thursday each week. You can actually sign up for all the future weeks all on the same time. So I recommend that if you're somebody who is interested in testing weekly. Next week is Kindness Week. Miss Jess, our school counselor, has been putting together a wonderful week of activities for students and families to and classrooms to collaborate on, centered around showing kindness to each other and our communities, which is really exciting. We also have another parent education night coming up Saturday, February 5th, which is centered on the history of whiteness. And it is with Rochelle Rogers Ard again. It is morning Saturday this time. So hoping that we can include some other folks that have been unable to attend other events. And then we are currently still in the midst of our winter NWEA, which is also going through February 4th.
So for some instructional updates, can you hear me? Okay. Okay. So we're open, and we feel like with our staffing struggles, we've gotten over the hump, fingers crossed, and so we plan on staying open, and we're surviving. Teachers are working really, really hard.
It's hard to hear you, Daniel.
I'll try and speak louder. How about it? Can you hear me now?
Yes, yeah? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so staffing in classrooms has been challenging, and all staff has been kind of moving either into gaps to support teachers or classrooms that need more adults. And so that's been really helpful for all of our staff and classrooms to, oh, sorry, okay, here.
So people can see you.
So during that time, coaching has been hasn't happened as much in my regular check-ins since I've been in classrooms for most of the time since we've come back from break. So please, again, reach out to your teachers to show some appreciation to them for standing in that space in this time that's been a really hard time for really for all educators out there. So then in terms of testing and data collection, like Krishna said, NWEA is in progress right now. We'll probably extend the window for NWEA past that February 4th date and at least go one more week, just because we've had lots of student absences also, so to make sure that everyone has enough time to take it. And we're doing it similar to the fall, where students are completing that NWEA testing during their work period, so happening in the normal flow of their day. The DIBELS is also going on, so that's our second round of our reading assessments, and some classes, we're actually well into that. Several classrooms are already finished, and a lot of classrooms only have a few more sections to go on that. So that's only being done for students who were previously identified as needing strategic or intensive supports, or who have some other reason that we need to reassess to track progress. In the coaching meetings that I have been having that I've been able to have with teachers since staffing's gotten a little easier, we have been checking, looking at transition checklists, which is tool created by the National Center for Montessori in the Public Sector and Public Montessori in Action to really look at what students should know, where they should be at the end of each level, tied to Common Core standards. So that's something that we're starting to look at as we move into the second half of the school year to kind of gauge where students are and what students, where, what area students might need support in classrooms. We haven't talked, I don't think we've talked at the whole board level about middle school restructure yet. We've talked about it at the Academic Oversight Committee, and that's, so that that started in January. We've had a new schedule, new daily schedule, which starts with PE every day. And there's been some changes to the structure of the classrooms. So now we have the seventh and eighth grades in different classrooms, and they stay that way for most of the day. And we also are using new curricular resources in math, science, and language arts. And so while there's been some questions that the students have brought up around not getting to see some of the friends that they want to in the other classroom, in the other grade level, overall, it's been a pretty positive change. And we're in discussion with the students also about as these, as we get used to some of these changes, like how are we going to create more opportunities for students to either interact with the students from that other grade level or work on collaborative projects across grade levels. So that's a conversation that we've started to have, and some slight adjustments have already been made based off of the successes that they've had in the new year. Oh, and so a few pictures from at one from each level. So we have Ms. Marquita working with some students on the stamp game and talking to another student who's working with the brown stare. In the lower elementary level, what's really nice about the Montessori curriculum is that that same material kind of carries over into the next level and gets used for more complex concepts. So they have, there's some familiarity with the material that then gets to, that they go deeper into in that work. We have a upper elementary literacy club, literacy circle that in Redwood with teacher Anna. And then the middle school and self-expression working, they were working on a Polaroid picture decorating class in that self-expression. So they were taking Polaroids of each other and decorating them and decorating other things also, as you can see. So just a glimpse into each of the classrooms that we hope to bring more of in future meetings.
Can you hear me? We're doing some complex audio sharing over here. So I'll talk enrollment a little bit. We're deep in enrollment season. The application deadline, I always forget to write that down, but it's in early February. It's February 4th. So it's that first Friday in February is the last day for the early enrollment for the first run of the lottery. So if you know any folks who are still looking for school programs for their students, absolutely share the link. Your best opportunity to have a spot, a poll in the lottery is to have your application in by Friday the 4th, which is a week from tomorrow. Currently, we have 201 total applicants. It's mostly in TK and K, which are our the spaces where we have the most available seats for students as well. But we're definitely always looking, particularly in that TKK slot, for more applications. If folks miss that February 4th deadline, they can still apply. It just means they automatically get put on the wait list in the order in which they apply after February 4th. So excited about that. Definitely share that with everybody. So just a little update about the COVID vaccination mandate. We talked about this last month and maybe the month before. This is related to Oakland Unified School District's mandate. So they passed a, I'm not exactly sure what it's called, but the students who were 12 on or before December 1st, 2021 are subject to a new vaccine mandate, which went into effect January 1st, 22. And we're actually subject, and all schools that are located on OUSD property are subject to their mandates around COVID at this point. And so we have been working with our families who qualify there are, which is 6th, 7th, and 8th grade families primarily. And majority of our students are actually vaccinated and in compliance with this mandate. But the good news from last night's OUSD board meeting is that there's no requirement for enforcement of the new mandate until August now of 2022. So while they're still requiring that students over 12 are vaccinated, they are not excluding or requiring us to exclude kids from school if they are not. So we're pleased to have a little bit more time to support our community through this. So we want to give a few staffing updates as well about this year and next year. So Ms. Sage's last day was December 17th. She was our TK through 4th grade education specialist, and we are really excited to share that Ms. Katie, and I shared this in communications, I believe, directly to all the families impacted quite some time ago, and last week in communications, that Ms. Katie, formerly from the Sequoia classroom, has taken over supporting students as specialized academic instruction for the TK through 4th grade students with IEPs, and she's also taken over Ms. Kelly's ELD students who scored ones and twos on the LPAC, so students who were receiving additional designated ELD support are now being seen by Ms. Katie. Also, we welcomed a new staff member January 3rd when we came back from break. Coach Wu started with us on the 3rd, and he began PE instruction for all students January 10th. So please ask your kids how that's going. They've now all had PE with him multiple times and would love to hear feedback from folks on that. All right, we've also launched our hiring season for next year. So this is the time of year that everybody starts thinking about the following school year. And so we opened up positions through our application portal for next year last week. And we already have quite a few applications for lots of different positions that are posted. And I'm also scheduling our yearly staff check-ins are gonna start next week. And these are 10 to 15 minute meetings that I have with every single staff member where the goal is to go through those three questions you see there. What's been going well? What's been challenging? And what is each person hoping for professionally, short-term and long-term? So it's our opportunity to see where folks are at, get some information about their plans for next year, and that helps inform our hiring as in this early season, which it's best to be ahead of these things, as we all know. That's it for me. I'm gonna drop out of the screen share.
I have a question on staffing and knowing how difficult attendance has been, you know, with staff this year too, and departures mid-year. I think, well, continually think the pandemic is almost at an end, but it keeps going. So who knows what next year will be like? Have you thought about additional kind of like buffer, you know, substitutes to hire and be on staff? While I really appreciate Danielle being in the classroom and covering, would love to see the school kind of trying to plan more. So you and Daniel can kind of keep doing your jobs, but there's still coverage. I know it's hard for you to get regular subs, but so kind of doing some planning around mid-year departures or, you know, attendance challenges next year too, with who knows what is going to happen with the pandemic.
Yeah, well, we've definitely been on the search for substitute teachers all year. We've had that position posted, and we are lucky to have a full-time sub on staff, which has supported, like, has made it better than it might be. And I think we have, and we're also, like, compared to other schools, we're in a really unique and better situation than most schools because we have more staffing across the board. And so the only time that Daniel is in rooms is when both teachers are out. So it's very difficult to cover those spaces. Usually we have one or the other of the teachers who is in and can operate mostly alone if they have to, with like people floating to support. And so we've definitely been very creative about that. And we're definitely thinking about it moving forward. I think it's a budget question. We're definitely willing and trying to make the investment this year to get more people, but I'll be honest, there's not a ton of applications for the current year. We have done some staffing shifting, and we are going to be welcoming another new staff member in February already, who will be taking over that. That's basically full-time sub position and floating in classrooms as needed. So we're excited about that, but I'm going to wait until he's here before I announce him more formally. So next month we'll share that. For next year, I think the reality of education right now is that all schools across the nation are going to have significantly more turnover this year to next year than is typical.
Yep.
And I'm sure that that will be true here as well. This is a very difficult time to be an educator. And so it's another reason why we're trying to stay very ahead of the hiring season and make sure that we're doing our best to prepare for whatever might come.
I have a question too. About the middle school changes, the changes in the middle school. Maybe I missed this. Is there a reason why there was a change with the curriculum? And then in my mind, they're sort of connected, but I really like the photos of the kids in the classroom, just seeing how they're working with the curriculum, and seeing the kindergarten and then the lower L with Montessori, tools or, and so I just wonder, mostly because my kiddo's in second grade, so I don't know, but how does it all this translate into middle school, the Montessori piece?
Yeah, I'm gonna let Daniel take that one.
Thank you.
Yeah, so the Montessori model for middle school definitely has a lot more traditional aspects to it. You don't see nearly as many of the Montessori materials that you see in the primary and elementary years. There's some that carry over a little bit into some of the math areas. So in that sense, the curriculum was brought in to kind of support that seventh, eighth grade split for the teachers who are now preparing for four different classes, right? So like, for example, for Mr. Nate, he's doing seventh grade math, eighth grade math, seventh grade science, and eighth grade science. So that's four different classes that he's preparing for. And so to make sure that we're offering grade level standards in all those different areas, we're using Amplify as a tool to support in that process. In that middle school classroom.
Can I kind of follow up on that? In terms of how does Amplify support differentiation within a grade level?
Sure. So this is also something that we're exploring with the teachers right now. And the main way is it's the way the lessons are designed have built in differentiation also. So like when you're going through, when teachers are preparing for that class and they're using some of the teacher materials, there's a lot of suggestions and instructions around how to support students, not only at different levels, but English language learners and just different needs. And so there's different either activities or threads that students can go down based off of whatever differentiation is built in that class.
I just want to say too, we've been talking about the middle school changes in the academic committee at both our meetings in December and January, and we will again at upcoming meetings. So that's another place to attend and learn more.
I have a comment on the enrollment, just to say that, and this is for the public, that applying is free, costs nothing, and it's pretty fast. There's not a lot of paperwork that gets collected at the application phase. And that this year, the one big thing that's new is that your TK kid, who's four, has to turn five by February 2nd, 2023. So if your child will turn five by February 2nd, 2023, they're eligible this year for TK. That's like doubling the amount of the calendar of birthdays that are eligible for TK this year. So I want to make sure that's a change that's true across the state. So like more families might be families who don't realize that their kid can come depending on their birthday. So that's a big piece to share out.
I have a question about the vaccine mandate. So is the assumption that since they are delaying enforcement to August, and I understand that that's a long way away, is the assumption that they are going to begin enforcing in August?
Yes, it means that students who are meet that age level but do not have an approved exemption or are vaccinated will not be allowed to enroll or will be disenrolled if they're returning. So that's true in OUSD schools. They were going to have to actively disenroll and drop any student who didn't meet those criteria. So what we were doing was supporting families in completing any of the exemptions or getting us the form. So like, we just want to be in compliance and support our families so we wouldn't have to drop anybody. And we were very confident that we would be able to pull that off if the deadline was in fact tomorrow, which is what it had been. Yeah. But they've fortunately pushed it out. I think it's likely that the state of California will by that point have a similar mandate for all schools. Okay. So that's surmise. It's something to be watching and preparing for.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Krishna and the head of school report?
Or any public comments from anybody? Yeah.
Sylvia, just making sure we're okay over there.
She can't. We can't hear Sylvia because we are in English, but Sylvia, thumbs up. Everything's still on track. Yeah.
Sylvia. Sylvia, ¿me puede escuchar? Sí, yo tengo una...
I have, as a mother, there's something that concerns me. My child told me that after April, it's mandatory for them to be vaccinated. So is the school making this mandatory for everyone as well?
We haven't made any mandates for vaccination. There are state requirements that exist for all schools that don't include COVID vaccination. And UMCS has not added any mandates for any vaccinations above what the state requires for everybody.
Okay, gracias.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions or comments from board members or community members? All right. If not, I will hand it over to Greg for Finance Committee. Do you want me to jump into minutes?
Yes. Okay. Yep. All right, and I will get out the presentation and I will share here. All right, you guys can all see. Make it a little bigger. Whoa. So we're going to talk about our current year-to-date financials. We have this split up on the agenda on a few different items, so I'm just going to see here. Yeah, we're going to do just, I'll just start with the year-to-date stuff, then we'll talk about the state stuff. So these numbers go through the end of the year, December 31st. Our financials always lag about a month, and we've saw some changes since the last time we met in early December. So in early December, we saw the financials, I think, through October. So now we're seeing them, we're seeing November and December. So last time we looked at our financials, sorry, go a little slower. We were running an operating one-time deficit this year of $91,000. And you can see since the last time we looked, there was some increases of other state revenue and some fundraising came in, and then there were some additional expenses and adjustments. So the books and supplies and services are more on the changes in expenses than a change from what we had forecasted prior. But some expenses are look like expenses. This is the LCSF reduction, which is the biggest change, is a decrease in our forecasted revenue. And what this is just looking at our latest enrollment and our latest attendance of the time, and just adjusting so that our budget matches how many our current ADA that we're on track for the school year. And so we get revenue to run the school based on our number of enrolled students times their attendance percentage, and that combination is the ADA, the average daily attendance. So you can see overall the one-time deficit is larger for sure. We've talked about this before, but I'll just say again, one of the ways the Finance Committee has discussed this is that this $177,000 current forecast, you know, part of what this is keeping a classroom open. Particularly in primary. Primary has fewer students than to really need three classrooms currently, but we want to make sure we're keeping things as stable as possible for our families, for our teachers, and also fully believe that we can, based on our application numbers, like have those classrooms back where they need to be next year and the year after, and we're gonna want those three classrooms to help, you know, the whole school be stable for the long run. So here's a way of looking at, so this first column is the last time we looked at the forecast, and you can see before we were looking at just under a 30% fund balance. So that means that we were gonna, our forecast, we thought we were gonna end the year with about a 30% of our expenses in our reserves. Our annual expenses available in our reserves. And so now that you can see that's dipped to about 28%. So still very strong. The county requires, I believe, 3%, and kind of a gold standard is 10%. We had set a goal of 20%. So we are still well above that. So the school, even though we're on track to spend more money this year than we bring in, we're still doing fine for sure when it comes to financials. And then we look at cash every year. Because it's important to have cash on hand, because when it's time to run payroll, you actually have to have the cash to do it. And so you can see we currently have enough cash on hand for 3 months of expenses. And you can see the three, just payroll down below is the blue line. And you can see cash, you know, goes, it dips, it's forecasted to dip later on below some of our goals, but it what happens every July is it shoots back up because the state pays in July. So it's very normal to dip like this, but on average we want to keep a healthy cash reserve. So we monitor it. There's no problems right now, no concerns. We just keep our eye on it. Okay, and then here was this is just a little bit more detail on that attendance adjustment that I was mentioning. We had a previous forecast of enrollment is a little bit lower, and our P1 attendance was, you know, four kids fewer than that. If you look in the Parent Square directory right now, there's actually more kids than 349. So this will keep getting adjusted. It might get a little bit better. But we just went ahead and wanted to keep things as conservative as possible. Okay, I'm going to talk about the audit later. So I think I'm going to pause there. So if there's any questions, comments from board or public about the change in the forecast, of any of the items, or about the cash flow projections for the year.
Craig, on slide four, the chart, what were some of the things that went in? I think it's the compensation and benefits with the 39,000.
So we're not actually spending that yet, but we're just praying that we'll be able to hire some extra substitute and student support assistant assistance this year. So currently it's booked in the hopes that we'll be able to spend that.
Got it. Okay.
Other questions about this forecast compared to last forecast or cash flow? Okay. I'm gonna make sure I can see everybody. All right, then I'm gonna close this item of the Finance Committee, and I'm gonna go on to item 3B, which is the talk about the state, the governor's budget. So I'm gonna go down a few slides. I'm gonna hang on. I'm gonna talk about the audit in a sec. Okay, so the governor released his budget, his proposal in January for next fiscal year, for the 22-23 fiscal year for the entire state of California. I believe the majority of which is public education, and almost maybe the majority is even K-12 public education. Major thing that he's proposing, none of this is set in law until the legislature and the governor agree and pass a budget, hopefully in June, is that building on some recent existing work called the ELO grant, ELOG, ELO is Expanded Learning Opportunities, the governor hopes to move the state to this new thing called the ELO program, which is calling for large increases in money for schools. But schools are going to have to do things pretty differently in order to use that money to operate pretty differently. And so a couple key components there of the ELO program are your regular school year. You have to make available not just a regular school day, but 9 hours per day of instruction. And then in addition to the regular school day, you have to add another 30 intersession days. So intersession can be like summer, like it can be some time over spring break, potentially like Saturday school. So it's like adding more access to school for kids. And you have to, I think the rules, I haven't got all the rules, but you can see there by fiscal year 2023 and beyond, you have to be offering this programming for all of your unduplicated students. And those students are students who qualify for free or reduced price lunch, students who are English learners, and students who are homeless or foster youth. And you can certainly offer that all this programming to other students as well, but you must offer it to those students. So that's going to be a big change, and there's going to be a lot more work for the school to think about, for administration, for the finance committee to think about. We don't start from zero on that. We have offered summer programming before. I haven't done the math, but we probably offer about 9 hours of instruction for a lot of kids, including the after school program. So, you know, there'd be definitely some changes, but it's not like necessarily starting from a blank slate. So that's one big piece of the January proposal from the governor that we wanted to highlight. And you can see this is just more on that. And then on terms of some basic numbers, the governor was proposing over a 5% cost of living adjustment. So that would increase, you know, that would help our next year's budget compared to what, about $100,000 additional dollars compared to what we were already kind of planning for. Increases, the governor's proposing increases for special education, so that we would have some more resources in special education. The Expanded Learning Opportunity Program that I just went over. And then there's a variety of other funding that are in the governor's proposal, like universal meals, snacks and meals. There's this early literacy set of funding that it was kind of was not as detailed out, so we have a lot more learning to understand like what might be in that proposal. And then I mentioned before the slow expansion of TK eligibility. So there's other ways that that can kind of have a financial upside for the school. So the what happens, you know, there'll be some additional proposals over the next few months. Like I said, hopefully they come to agreement and they pass a budget in June. Oh, I guess the next major milestone is that based on working with the legislature, the governor will revise this proposal and release it as the May revise. So in May, we'll get another bunch of numbers. The governor in his press conference was hopeful that in May, the numbers would be even better for across the board, the whole state, including public schools, than what he's proposed in January. So hopefully, so for now we plan with these numbers, we update in May, and we will hopefully be able to adopt our budget based on what the state actually adopts for their budget. Sometimes the timing doesn't work on that, but we'll do our best. So that was a lot about the January proposal. So I'll pause there. Were there any questions or comments about the governor's January proposal? Or public comments from anybody about that?
Greg, sorry if I missed this, Silvia, but can... yo sí tengo un comentario, entonces quiere decir...
I have a comment. So what does this mean? What this means, if these funds will get approved, then will our students get benefits for all the things that we have under the qualifications that we're speaking about, language or language arts or being an ESL student? Would they not benefit? Why is there the difference between students? I don't think there's going to be an equitable participation based that all of the students are students.
Okay, that's a great question and comment. So the state has a long history of giving schools money based on a particular dynamic or characteristics of who the students are in their schools. So the state basically has a fundamental belief that, you know, if you've got a school with a lot of students who qualify for free or reduced price lunch, well, you are a school that might need some additional resources to help educate those kids. Or if you've got students who are English learners, well, those students might need additional instruction or a specialized program or teacher or small group, and that can cost money. So the state sends some money in addition for the baseline in order to help cover those costs. So what the state is saying is, we want to create opportunities for the students most in need to have access to more school, more specialized programs. So we're trying to send more money to the schools to create opportunities that's designed for those students. But they're open to all students, but you're required as a school to make them accessible to the students that are connected to the funding sources. So I'll stop there, and hopefully, I don't know if that answers your question.
Yes.
Gracias.
Yes, okay. Thank you.
Sure. Someone else, I think, had a question or a comment.
Yes, Sarah, I did. Sorry if I missed this, but bullets 2 and 3 under LCFF, can you speak to those a little bit?
Oh, sure. So the governor is proposing the bullet reads, districts may choose between 3 ADA options. And this is a proposal that the governor's got, basically, that only applies to traditional public school districts. So I didn't go over it because it doesn't apply to charter run schools. But basically, they're going to be, if the governor proposal works out, basically school districts will get to kind of have their ADA be like an average over the last 3 years. So that if they're in a declining enrollment district, like, they don't kind of hit a fiscal cliff as much, I guess. So the third bullet refers to that too. The governor knows that the legislature also has a proposal about how to deal with the same dynamic of many districts being in declining enrollment, some before the pandemic, but certainly during the pandemic. California lost like 160,000 public school kids from last year to this year. And it was actually California is only one of, like, don't quote me on this, but I think it's like only 3 states that fund schools the way we currently do. Many schools fund schools just based on how many students you have enrolled. So if you have 400 kids, you have, you know, it's, you kind of just have a more membership model, not like the number of kids times their attendance percentage. That's the other dynamic that he was trying to is the attendance. He was trying to acknowledge, I know kids have been absent a lot because of the pandemic and quarantining and things like that. And so he's also looking forward to next, he's proposing to like ease that for next year around attendance.
Cool, thanks.
Okay, last call for the governor's January proposal. Any other questions or comments? All right. We have more financial stuff.
More than a comment, I have a question. I don't know if maybe this is out of place or if it's regards to the same points, but I would like to make this before we move further with the meeting and I won't have access to making other questions, or it just runs out of my mind. What proposal or what suggestions does the school have to, how are we going to work with the deficit that we have so that we can bring all of those substitutes that we are speaking about so that we can have them at full time? If we have more students and we still don't have a plan to bring more teachers aboard, and we're talking about is something that is a possibility that may happen, but not something that is happening right now. If the school is becoming it's growing more with more students, but we don't have the infrastructure necessary, how are we going to deal with this?
Okay. So the deficit is for this year, and it's almost entirely due to the fact that, as I was just mentioning, I'm just going back up to it, that we had fewer students than we thought we were going to have because of the pandemic. More families, particularly in primary, the primary classrooms are not as full. And so in other places, including in the Oakland Unified, when that happened earlier in the fall, when school, you plan for a certain number of students, you hire a certain number of teachers, but if the students don't show up, they consolidate those classrooms. And sometimes they move teachers from one school to another, and students have like larger class sizes. We as a board decided last fall, you know, a couple months ago, we didn't want to do that. They were not eligible for vaccine at that time. Very few, some of them still aren't if they're not five yet. So the class sizes are lower this year, and we decided that's a good investment. We wanted to keep the teachers there. So that's what's driving this year's deficit. What I haven't shown, because we're not talking about it tonight, but we'll bring it back to a future board meeting and you can come to finance. We also have a multi-year budget. And in the multi-year budget, we don't have that deficit because we can model again that as students come back and continue to fill up the classrooms, not overfill, but just fill the classrooms, that deficit is not an issue as we look out for the future years. There's our expenses and revenues match. And then Ms. Krishna is going to talk about the staffing.
I just want to add on, we are fully staffed. We actually have more staff than we need technically for the number of students we have, like Greg was talking about, in our primary classrooms. The issue we're encountering this year around staffing is about quarantining and illness for staff and the requirements for staying home with any symptoms, but isn't an issue of us not having enough people on our payroll. We are looking for more subs to help support with just the same issues that families are dealing with your kids. If your child is sick, there's all these rules about having to stay home, needing a test to come back. Those same rules apply for all of us adults who are here in this building. And so that's just caused, it feels short-staffed, but we are technically, we have more staff than we actually need. So hopefully as everybody's health improves, this will actually be not an ongoing issue.
Does that help answer?
Digamos que sí y no. Let's say yes and no, because if based on the data that you are explaining to us right now, we have more staff. So how can you explain that we still have a deficit with our academics, and at the time that we are looking at the data when it comes to the testing, and you know, we're talking about not just getting a school grade, we're talking about a grade that's in the school record for the student.
So a student, we're going to get to academic performance in a moment about academic meetings. So we're going to pause on that question for now. And then if you have more questions about finance, I'll put my email in the chat. You can email me or we can set up a meeting, and you could definitely come to finance meeting too. We can keep going over more numbers. I can share the multi-year budget, so you can see how it changes over time. Other folks have comments or questions?
Sí. Gracias.
Okay. All right, we're going to keep it going. We got a couple more items here on the finance side. I'm going to move on to item C. We have our audits. We got back our audit for the 2020-2021 school year, and we got our G1 audit, Measure G1 audit for last school year as well. So they're both there. They're connected to the agenda, and there were no findings for either one. They both come back completely clean. We're all good. And so I would make a motion. The Finance Committee reviewed this. I'm going to make a motion that the board vote to accept both audits. Is there a second?
This is Jan. I second.
Okay, so before we vote, is there any public comment or discussion about the audits or any questions about the audits? Okay, then Davis, are you going to be able to?
I will take the vote. Sarah, how do you vote?
Yes, you're approved.
Maru?
Yes.
Kara?
Yes.
Jan?
Aye.
Greg?
Yes.
And this is Davis, and I vote aye. Motion passes unanimously.
Great. And then the last financial one before we hand it over to Jan, and we're actually on track to being ahead of the calendar or the agenda of the time, so we're doing all right. Thank you, everybody. Is about the lease here at 4551 Steel Street. So our current lease ends at the end of this year. In a moment, I'm going to make a motion to adopt this and vote and approve this new lease, which would run through June 30th, 2024, which aligns with our current charter term. So it would be for next school year and the year after at the same exact facility we are right now. It just keeps everything basically status the same. The only other thing I'll add is that last night OUSD's board also approved the same lease for us. Their board also has to vote on the lease, and they did last night, and they approved it. Krishna, do you have anything else you want to add about that?
No, I think we're excited to have security in our facilities here for another 2 years.
And if folks are wondering, it's to have a lease that extends, that matches our charter term, feels good. So that, you know, a future step will be to go get reauthorized, get a renewal from the county, seek that renewal, and then after that, seek a renewal of the lease, you know, to match the new charter again. So I'm going to make a motion to approve this lease in lieu of Prop 39. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Kara. And then is there any public comment or other discussion before we take a vote?
I want to appreciate Krishna for working on this. I think having this stability for the school will be wonderful, and be able to, Krishna and others be able to focus their time on matters that more directly relate to the school instead of
facilities, which, as we all know, can take a lot of time. So yeah, very excited about this.
I was going to say, for people who aren't privy to kind of our past history with Prop 39, it's been tough sledding. So yeah, it's pretty exciting to have a 2-year lease on the table. So are there any other comments or questions before we take the vote? All right. Sarah, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. Maru?
Aye.
Kara?
Aye.
Jan?
Aye.
Greg?
Yes.
And this is Davis, and I'm voting aye. Motion passes unanimously.
All right. Thank you all. Thanks for all those items. I'm going to pass the baton to Jan for the next item of the agenda.
Great. I feel like academic committee, a lot of it is already covered by the instructional updates. But let's see, a few additional things and some details. We talked about attendance and, you know, just especially this month, the challenges that the school has been having both with staff and student attendance. Student attendance being about in the upper 70s to low 80s each day. So that's, you know, about 80% of students attending each day. Whereas kind of pre-pandemic, that was often more like 94%. So that again, going back to the kind of funding is based on attendance and enrollment. So attendance being low for January, you know, does have financial implications, and staff being out and just, yeah, there's a lot of other things and challenges that everyone is facing in addition to, you know, trying to instruct each day. We did not look at other data, are looking forward to doing that in February. As Daniel mentioned, NWA map assessment is happening right now. So we are looking forward to being able to look at our growth data from fall to winter. So that will be coming up, as well as Panorama survey data. So Panorama is a survey there's a version for students, there's a version for staff, and a version for family. So looking forward to getting those data as well. And for students, you know, hearing a bit more about their social emotional well-being, and staff and family satisfaction with the school. We have been talking about the Amethyst and middle school changes and hearing that, you know, change and differences are already always hard, but that even after, you know, a few days, things getting into a better, you know, routine, really engaging the students in the changes. The new curriculum had been going well, Amplify assessments, using it, and that Daniel and others were excited about those. Other things coming up that we will talk about, assessment results, curriculum or instructional changes for next year, anything there to discuss, and we will be, you know, revisiting and monitoring the changes in the middle school program. That's all.
Does anyone have any questions for Jan about academics?
I do. So with kids, students being absent longer this month, and just I think in general, maybe this year because of the pandemic, because of COVID. What is the impact on learning and education? And at what point are teachers or administration kind of concerned, if there are concerns, if they're falling behind or providing support for them? I think it's a two-part question. And then the two-part question is, you know, I've done this with my kid where I think in the first semester we did keep her home because there was a concern for exposure. And then and then again this time we did get a doctor's recommendation to do that. So I think technically the absences this time were excused, but then the ones before were not. So I just wonder if there's something like that happening with other students, if parents are keeping their kids at school because of COVID concerns, and maybe absences are not excused. Like, what does that mean for attendance and learning for the kids?
I can answer, Jan, about the excused, unexcused. And then I think I see Mr. Daniels' gears turning for the first part, but I'm not sure. On the excused, unexcused, just to be clear, that has nothing, you know, if your kid's absent, they miss the learning, whether it's excused or unexcused. So that's one aspect of it. And then on it also, if you're asking about the financial implications, it makes no difference. It doesn't make any difference for the school finances. An absence is an absence, no matter what it is. It more has to do, it's kind of an outdated, like the state doesn't really monitor excused versus unexcused. Schools use it to try and understand if there's like a larger problem or issue that maybe is going on for a student or a family that they could then maybe intervene or try and help problem solve around. But for the most part, it doesn't have any implications about the finances, that's for sure.
I think in terms of learning, and Daniel, yes, definitely jump in, but let me just say a couple things. One, I think we are eager to see the mid-year assessment data. So which is, you know, happening now, and we will dig into in the next meeting to see how have students been growing this fall, how does that compare to last fall, how have they grown since last winter as well. We like looking at year over year growth as well for students. And I think despite all of this, of, you know, hearing from Daniel that actually is really proud and impressed and, you know, feeling really good about all the instruction and lessons that have been taking place this year, and really kind of the fidelity to the Montessori model. So kind of despite everything going on, feeling that it has been a really strong instructional year, even though there have been a lot of challenges with both staff and student absences. And I can let Daniel say more.
Yeah, I don't have too many more things to add. And like, it's true that this year we have put in a lot of structures and supports to really have teachers be able to give more lessons than in the past and keep track of that and keep students on pace with state standards and the Montessori curriculum. That being said, yes, everyone's concerned around the number of absences that we have, right? And like the missing days of school and instruction is something that is definitely something that's at the forefront of all of the teachers' minds and as a school around education. But I think some of the strengths of the Montessori model, at least around being able to support that, is that because of the way that we give lessons, it's not whole class instruction, right? Where it's everyone's going to do something one day, and then the next day, everyone's going to do the next piece. Like, there is an aspect of I'm able to give you, when you come back, and whatever students are ready for that lesson, a very specific lesson to support where you are, and then like create that individualized plan to hopefully get you back up to where the pacing that you should be at your grade and according to state standards. So I think that's one thing that the model supports with. But it's definitely something that we're all thinking about in terms of the amount of instruction that is missed when students are home. Independent study is an option for students, and while it's not for up to 14 days of absence, but you know, that it, that doesn't necessarily replace classroom instruction, but that is one support that's also in place.
Daniel, that's when I become the teacher. The independent studies and doing this at home, but yes. Thank you. Thank
you. Community efforts.
Yeah. Thank you all for your feedback. That's really helpful. Particularly that state level information, Greg, that's good to know that it doesn't matter. Which, yes, as you said it, I'm like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense. They don't make distinctions. So yeah, thank you.
We're sort of supposed to follow up with people with 10% or more absences. And this year has been, that doesn't always feel appropriate this year. It is something that we pay attention to, and we'll reach out to families where we have a specific concern around attendance. But the pandemic has made that whole piece much more complicated.
That's good to know. I think maybe that was the piece I was trying to get at. Like,
yeah,
at what point are we concerned? Is there a threshold where we say this is a red flag? And yes.
I want to add one more comment because I'm realizing that I've had maybe a lot of emails about it. Like our student information system sends automatic messages. So if your student is tardy or absent, you get an automatic phone call. We don't, like, no staff has to do that. It happens automatically. When your student has been absent for 3 days or more, you get an automatic letter sent that looks very formal. It is based on state requirements for us to send that under Ed Code. So just to be clear, you're going to get that. And this year is quite strange. We're not interested in anything except supporting our families' needs around attendance. And we're not interested in taking that to some legal area, but the Ed Code does also require us to have these things in place in our student information system, which has caused concern and confusion for many families.
And have there been any families reaching out for support, or if you or other staff have reached out to them, have any of them expressed need for that support?
No, folks have reached out to clarify their reasons for absences and with concern around the nature of the letters that go out that state some of the data around the impact that absences have statistically on people's on student learning over time. So that has been most of the communication I've had, and I think that the operations team has had with families. There hasn't been an ask for more than there's asks for how can we teachers, share work, and we do that through the independent study program. And teachers will do that directly also with families quite frequently, even outside of that programming.
It sounds like these letters are tone deaf to the pandemic, but they're these required things from the state.
Made some language changes.
Yeah. Let me just say this and you tell me if I'm wrong, but teachers can reach out to families if they're noticing trends and ask about is there something we can do to help, or and if there's if there's, because teachers know who are friends with each other and all, and they see kids going home with each other, if there's ways they can help families connect over Parent Square or whatever to organize carpool or what, just problem solve. Teachers are a big part of noticing those trends in their students and then connecting with those students directly and helping those students and their families problem solve is my assumption about part of what a teacher does all day long. Okay, I'm getting some head nods. Are there other questions or public comments for the academic committee?
If there are no other questions, we'll move to FAC. Maru?
I'm actually going to do the FAC presentation. Okay. Let me
share my screen.
Thank you, Kara.
You're welcome. I'm trying to share my screen. Host disabled participant screen share. Okay. Here we go. Okay, can everybody see my screen? Okay. Let's see. You guys out of my way. We have been meeting monthly, which is amazing and wonderful. We continue to have a variety of attendees at the meetings with new people, with new questions and comments, which is really cool. Some recent activities that we've done are the Campus Beautification Day and our Staff Appreciation Lunch, which I heard very nice things about. Upcoming, we have the Great Kindness Challenge and Spirit Week, which, as Krishna said, is spearheaded by Jess. And is being supported by the FAC. We have activities after school 3 days next week, I think, which an email went out from Pizza about today. Our next parent education meeting with Rochelle is on Saturday the 5th. The next FAC meeting is on February the 8th. Morning coffee should resume in February. We skipped it in January just because it seemed like a really bad idea. Some fundraising updates. Let me scare this rolling. Our winter auction raised over $7,000. So thank you everyone for bidding and buying stuff. Upcoming fundraisers, we have a Cards for a Cause fundraiser, which is, I sent out a teaser email about yesterday, and it's basically buying a box of cards and money comes to the school from that. There'll be a spring auction with details to come. We're going to have our plant and bake sale on April 23rd, and I know Greg is busy planning the upcoming move-a-thon, walk-a-thon move-a-thon. I know he's enlisting middle school students to help plan that, so that will be exciting. Upcoming stuff, we have our FAC meetings on both the school calendar and the parent care calendar. I added them all to the school calendar because that's how I know when they happen. Upcoming workshop with Dr. Richard. Rogers Ard, the one on February 5th, and then the final one of the year on April 19th. And that is everything from FAC. Does anyone have any questions?
Not a question, just a brief comment to say it feels like the FAC is flowing again, which is just really nice.
Yeah, it is nice. CIFA's doing a lot of outreach and communication and just standardizing stuff, which is cool. It's hard to find volunteers for stuff, but she's being innovative and creative.
Thank you very much, Kara. Greg, are you doing exec? Okay. We will move to Executive and Governance Committee. I am moving into minutes.
Okay. So the Executive and Governance Committee met. We talked about a bunch of stuff. We kind of updated at our time about the COVID vaccine mandate from OUSD and how it would apply to urban and if there were going to be any changes. We chatted about a little bit about the process for Ms. Krishna's evaluation and where we are in that timeline. We're about to release the self-evaluation part for Ms. Krishna to go spend, you know, hours and hours and hours just reflecting on what have been some challenges this year and what have been some successes. And so that's kind of where we are in the next step of the process. And so that'll be happening soon. Part of that process is that staff get to weigh in and give feedback on Ms. Krishna's performance. And this year we've already had one listening session opportunity. We have another one coming up in spring with staff. But in the meantime, we gave them also this year, which was new, another way to give input, which is like another like a survey or a form that they can kind of fill out if they want to share something more and not wait till March. Let's see, a couple of reminders for everybody. We will need to schedule some like Brown Act training and conflict of interest training for probably later this spring. That's every board member needs to do that every year, but it's obviously particularly important for new board members. In the meantime, board members, if you ever have any questions, it's okay to ask me. It's okay. And it's okay if we make a mistake, we will just work to cure it as fast as possible. And the other thing is, if you're a new board member, you need to make sure you complete your Form 700 when you join the board, and you have to sign it with a real pen on real paper, and you turn it in to Ms. Krishna. But you always have someone. Who do you send it to?
The Form 700.
Yeah.
Send those to Rosie.
Yes.
She knows where they go.
Just bring them here to the main office. You can ring the bell and bring them to the main office, and Ms. Rosie will know where they go. And then also, board members, if you haven't already, you have to get fingerprinted as well. So if you're new and you haven't done that yet, that's a part of the background check process. And if you need more help with that, you can just follow up with me directly or with Ms. Krishna. The school covers the costs associated with that. And then the last thing from the committee is that, and it kind of relates back to the finances as well, is that we are in the midst of preparing a material revision to our charter to submit to Alameda County Office of Education next month. We are not requesting any changes I think almost all of Alameda County's authorized charter schools are going up for material revisions soon related to their enrollment. So we, you know, their board approved our school when they last approved our, you know, last charter. And in the charter, it talks about, well, we expect the school to be this big each year, you know, this number of students every year. And the rule is with Alameda County is that if you have a change from what you were supposed to be by more than 10% or 10% overall or 25% in a grade level, then you have to bring your whole charter back to them with the updated actual enrollment numbers and with your updated like forecast of your enrollment of the next couple of years, and they re-vote on your charter. So Urban Montessori was like, I don't know, I'm going to get this wrong, but like we're like six kids beyond what we're allowed to be in terms of different from what we thought we were going to be this year and in terms of enrollment numbers. And so we have to prepare a material revision. Now, we had already been doing a revision work. This is more than you all need to know, but the bottom line is our legal counsel helps us prepare the document, and our financial supports have helped us update those enrollment numbers. So most of the work is either done or like on its way over the next like week and a half, 2 weeks. And the main thing everyone here should know is that Davis will call a special meeting because we have to approve our own material vision, our own charter prior to submitting it in the middle of February. So we will post an agenda. It'll just have the one, you know, main item on it. We can discuss it again. We'll vote in on it, and we'll submit it, assuming we approve our own charter. But the only thing different is simply just updating the enrollment numbers and the associated budgets, the financials that match those enrollment numbers. And we're just matching it to what we currently have, like in our current the forecast that we already have been updating. So I will stop there. If there are any questions or public comments about the committee's report or about the material revision process or anything else. Okay, I'm not seeing any comments or any questions about that. I must have just done an amazing job explaining it, of course. And so with that, we're gonna go on to item 6B, which is an opportunity, it's still under executive and governance. This is a chance for the board, if we need to take action around our own officers or our committee membership or our committee leadership. And I'm I'm not aware of any requests of any changes, but wanted to just, this is just an open standing item. If we have people need to get on a committee or overthrow Davis and have a different chair. Okay, I'm not seeing anything, so then I'll just ask if there's any public comments about that item. Doesn't look like we're going to take any actions. Donald, go ahead, Donald. You got to unmute. I can't hear you. Still looks like you're muted. There you go. Yeah, a little bit. Put it back in.
So my earpiece hasn't been working very well. I am still interested in board service, just to make that known.
Yes. All right. Well, you decide. You need to pick someone like me or Davis, or you could pick, you know, some other member of the governance committee. It could be Christina. She's not here tonight. And we need to just have a one-on-one as the next step. I'll follow up. Yeah, me. I guess I'll reach out and we just need to connect one-on-one and we'll take the next steps. Easy peasy. Thank you again for your interest.
Thank you.
Yeah. Our bylaws let us have up to 11. We're currently 7, so we have room. We're room for talented folk. All right. Any other public comments or questions on item 6B? Okay, then David, is it okay if I go on to the next item about Oakland? Okay, so a few Oakland and California updates and just check the time. Yeah, we're still running a little bit ahead. I think I've already shared about the state from the state about the governor's proposal. I think the main Oakland updates that I definitely want to reference is that there's been some news in local news and certainly on social media about information coming out of OUSD related to public district run school closures. Closures, mergers, consolidations. So just wanted to make a comment that, members of the public who are here or other board members, you may be hearing about that. That specific topic has not actually made it onto OUSD's board agendas yet, but it is slated to come, I think, next week. And there could be votes as soon as like middle of February involving multiple schools. So it's a very complicated issue. It is for many members of the community, for teachers, for staff, for students, can be very traumatic and bring up all sorts of past things and present issues. And doing it all in the middle of a pandemic is just all incredibly difficult and complicated. So I just want to at least acknowledge it. There have been no official recommendations yet from OUSD staff. They haven't yet had a chance to present any of that work. They were asked by their board to bring a set of recommendations, and a draft list has been circulated publicly. So we may have members of our own school community who have students in these schools. We may have families here who work in these schools. We may have staff here who used to work in these schools. We are very likely connected to any number of the schools on the draft list or on the eventual recommended list. I can't tell you for sure exactly what the OUSD board will do, but it seems like they will take action one way or the other in a couple of weeks. So by the time we next meet, there may have been a bunch of newspaper articles about all this and everything. So I just wanted to bring it up, make sure people were aware that this was going on. And if folks want more information, I'm happy to connect about this, one-on-one. If people want to ask me questions, I can try and at least share where I've been getting some of the information that I get. So I definitely wanted to share about that. The other thing is that OUSD, related to but also separate from school closures, consolidations, and mergers, is also just their ongoing work around the rest of their budget. And so they've also adopted budget cuts, I think last night, of about $40 million for next year, like reducing for next year by about $40 million. And they had to pass that resolution now in order to meet some deadlines set by the county. But they don't actually adopt their budget until like June, like every other school does. I think I'll leave it at that. Do other people have any updates about from the state or from Alameda County Office of Education or from Oakland that may have potential to impact our community, or questions for me or comments about what I shared? Okay. Davis, I think you can bring it home. I can hop back into the minutes if you'd like. We're on item 7B.
Hopping out of the notes, we are on item 7B. We have the minutes from our December 2nd regular meeting. Does anyone have any questions or comments on those minutes? If not, can I have a motion on those minutes?
This is Jan. Make a motion.
Jan is motioning to approve those minutes. Okay. I will second that motion.
And I will call the roll. Davis?
Aye.
This is Greg. I vote yes. Jan?
Aye.
Kara?
Yes.
Maru?
Yes.
Sarah?
Yes.
And Christina is absent. So the minutes are adopted. Next item is 7C, the general consent report.
Are there any questions or comments about the general consent report? And if not, can I have a motion on that general consent report?
One second, I think I have a question. Was the only thing that changed in the safety plan, just it looked like a link was changed, or were there other?
We updated some link. Staff and I updated some language about like the access to the rapid tests, like the US, you know, through the post office, and also mm-hmm. the reimbursement okay. rapid tests, and about like trying to make them as available for students who need them to stay or return to school. But thank you, Yolanda. See, Yolanda is saying goodnight. Thank you. Just clarifying, like we will do our best to make them available when a family requests them and needs them, but also encouraging families to try and use the testing at the school on Fridays or other rapid tests that they have, and not only just rely on the school to supply all of their tests.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. It was difficult to see what had been updated.
All right, Greg, ask the inane Brown Act question. Since we asked the question and we discussed it, do we need to pull this from the general consent report?
Well, there's only the one item. So yeah. I think the way this works is you're allowed to take questions and comments on the general consent report as a whole. And all right. And vote on it. So it's either way, it's just one thing. It's all good.
Okay. All right.
I think the motion is still to approve the general consent report, and I'll make it. I'll motion that.
Okay. I will second that motion.
Are there just real quick before we vote, any other questions or comments on the general consent report? Okay. Davis, how do you vote?
Aye.
This is Greg. I vote yes. Jan?
Aye.
Kara?
Yes, my headphones just died, so
I don't think you can hear me. Kara says her headphones died, and she says yes. And Krishna, can you validate that for me?
I heard that yes.
Okay. Maru?
Yes.
And Sarah?
Yes.
Okay, and it would not have made a difference to the vote. It would have passed either way. Okay, new, yeah, sorry, Davis, go ahead.
Yeah, no, are there any new items that anyone wants to add for future meetings?
I don't have any new items. I just wanted to make a comment about this, that Board on Track, the system we use to power our agendas and minutes, they make updates every month. And one of their updates now is the ability to make public a draft agenda. So we can start to, you know, I think I made the February agenda available to the public now, and, right. and it says draft. So okay. you'll be able to see them, and if you want to add, and there are always instructions on the agenda, like you can email the chair to like add, request an item be added. So, awesome. If you have new items, board, you can all board. I think you could always see the draft agendas, but now everyone will be able to.
That's great. That's awesome. Yeah.
And just double checking, I think we said at the beginning when we switched to this new link, we were going to update the link so that the translation is, the feature is available at the beginning, so we don't.
That's absolutely right. I'm going to update I'm going to make sure that the committee links and the regular board meeting links always have this ability. Thank you.
And so the only wonder I'm having is whether we need to invite, like, Sylvia, like we've typically had you join our main board meetings, and thank you for doing this and many other events for us. We haven't had you at the committee meetings. We almost never have any public, but I can usually get Rosie to jump in last minute on those, but she doesn't sign up simultaneous. So if folks know they're going to attend, let us know so we can make sure Sylvia is available. We can always have translation available, but Rosie prefers a back and forth translation, and we can always make her available if needed for one of those other committees if Sylvia is not available.
All right. Any other items for future meetings?
Sorry, just another question. Is Spanish the language that seems to be the most needed? Are there other languages by our other parents that maybe keep them from coming for our meetings? Do we know that?
We do have other languages in our community. Spanish is definitely the largest and second most dominant language in our community, with I think, you know, 17 or 18% at least of our students are classified as English language learners in Spanish, and it's a much smaller number of other families. But I can't say that I know for sure that that's not something that is holding up families from joining, and I think that would be a great work for our ELAC to engage in moving forward, is ensuring that we're not just supporting our English language learners and families, but also being inclusive of our other multilingual and monolingual non-English speakers.
I'll just add, like, while we're figuring out, you know, all the languages we might want at a board meeting, if there's translation, like, I'm happy to do a one-on-one and do a recap of a board meeting, or help them navigate the website. So just as we're trying to figure it out, if people know that someone needs some help, and maybe this is to staff, like if Mr. Buck and McStephanie and Miss Rosie know that there's a family that is looking for access, and they, you know, we have a translator, but like, maybe they don't want to come to the meeting, I'm happy to figure out another meeting.
Okay. Any other items for future meetings or? All right. with that, we will move into closed session. Greg, do you want us to walk us through that?
Yeah, we're going to go, it's 8:10 or 8:11. Fix that. And we're going to go into closed session on one topic tonight, which is the one we always do, public employee performance evaluation of the head of school. And so before we go into closed session, though, this is anyone from the public. This will be just the board and Ms. Krishna in this part of the meeting, and we pause the recording. And when we come out of open session, we will unpause the recording and we report out if there were any votes taken about anything, and that all gets listed on the recording and in the minutes. And then we'll look, that's the last item. So then Davis will adjourn. But before we go into closed session, if there's any, we take public comment on the item. So if there's anyone who wants to make a comment about this topic, public employee performance evaluation for the head of school, this is your chance. You can make a public comment, but we won't necessarily be able to respond, but you get to make your comment. Okay, then with that, I'm going to pause the recording since there are no public comments.
Hey, Greg, usually you comment about if someone wants to hear the results.
Right. So we still have a few members of the public left on the call. So we can pause the recording, and then the board and Ms. Krishna, we could go into like a Zoom breakout room. So, you know, we can go into a room and have a private conversation and come back out. Or sometimes people are like, that's fine, I'm leaving, and then we just stay in this room. So it's just up to you all what you want to do. Okay, I see Donald saying goodnight. I'll put the draft minutes up as soon as possible in the recording. So if there's any actions, the most common thing, you can look back through the minutes, the most common thing is that we report out no actions were taken. It's just a conversation. Thank you. Thank you, Maria. Sounds like you might be leaving. So thank you all for coming. Thank you, Sylvia, for translating. We're going to go into closed session. If you want to stay on, you can. We'll just go into a Zoom room and we'll come back out. So I'm going to pause the recording now.
All right, we are returning to open session at 8:29 p.m. There were no actions taken during our closed meeting. And with that, I will adjourn our meeting. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.